Rod's Pulse Podcast number 27, Had You Cause Interview, Espresso Course Caster and Comcast Connection Blues.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back.
Connection Blues, for every other customer, this downtime isn't news. I think it's back up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's off, never mind, I've gone offline again.
Last episode I played some country music and now blues. Anyway, I thought you might get a kick out of this piece. It's called The Comcast Connection Blues, another piece from the PodSafe Music Network. Stay tuned, and at the end, I'll play the entire Comcast Connection Blues. Before I get into my main topic today, I want to talk about some news from the Podosphere. The first item I have is entitled Professors, Students Want More University Podcasts. This comes out of the University of Washington, where they published a report on their first year's experience with educational podcasting. I'll just briefly list some of their key findings. Most students, 87%, listen to the podcast on a computer rather than on their MP3 players. That indicates that mobility may not be the driving factor behind student use. Students reported using podcasts in conjunction with other online resources such as lecture notes and PowerPoint slides. The majority of instructors reported little or no prior experience with podcasting. The automatic recording model allowed instructors to use this technology with no reported difficulties. Students and instructors both found podcasts to be useful tools, helping students catch up when they miss class. And both students and instructors expressed concern that the adoption of this technology could lead to higher rates of absenteeism. However, the availability of podcasts had no impact on most students' attendance. And last, both students and instructors indicated that podcasting should be incorporated in courses with 100 or more students. Interesting. I'll have the URL to this news item in my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. The second item is podcasting at the University of Connecticut. It's an article by David Miller, who's in the Department of Psychology, and he has some interesting insights and interesting uses for podcasting. And it's funny because he relates a story from a motion picture called Real Genius back in 1985. The sequence depicts a class in a lecture hall at various points during the semester. In the beginning, the lecture hall is full of students. Tape recorders gradually appear at the students' desks. Ultimately, the students disappear, leaving only tape recorders. By the end of the film, the professor has been replaced by a tape recorder broadcasting the lecture to the students' tape recorders. That image made him question the pedagogical value of routine course casting. Anyway, this led David Miller to use podcasting on what I think is a very creative and interesting way. He created something he called iCube, Issues in Intro, where it was a series of discussions about the course content, but not the actual content itself. So he would have small meetings with students who would come together and discuss the material, and then they would record it and issue the discussions as a podcast. Now, this was for a very large course, and it turned out that a lot of the students liked listening to these informal discussions. The students would tell them that even though they weren't involved in the actual recording, they feel like they were part of the small group. So that's a very interesting way to use podcasts. In another course that David Miller gave, he would record the podcast, what he called a precast. And again, it was for a large general psychology course. And these precasts would be reviews of some of the real difficult issues that were coming up in the lecture, and he would make these available before lecture. So he would expect students to come to lecture, and the ones that might have been struggling learn to begin to listen to these precasts before they would go to lecture, and thereby making the lecture more meaningful to them. So again, some interesting and useful ways to think about using podcasts. The last news item I have gets into the clinical realm, and this refers to a Denver surgeon who is using podcasts to actually enhance podcasts, which has some video, to demonstrate his techniques in pediatric surgery. It's a Denver pediatric specialist, Dr. Steven Rothenberg, and he's begun to use medical video podcasts to share his surgical techniques with others. And I think this is also a growing way to use podcasts, especially video podcasts. So anyway, tune into those pages. You'll see the URLs on my show notes. Before I get into the main topic today, I also wanted to share with you a new podcasting tool that I discovered, and it's called the Levelator. And it's a piece of software that adjusts audio levels within a podcast for that helps to even up the variations when you have more than one speaker. Now, I'll be playing my interview that's just coming up, and I used the Levelator to help to even out the volume. And I think if you're podcasting, this is a must-have application. It's more than just a compressor or noise reducer. It helps to level out if you have more than one speaker. If you just have one speaker, obviously it's not going to help. But if you have multiple speakers, maybe some are on the telephone or on a Skype phone, this can do wonders to your final audio stream. So check out the Levelator. And now for my main topic today, I have an interview to play for you. It's something that I recorded at the EDUCAUSE 2006 meeting in Dallas. And I interviewed Jeff Allen, who's the chairman and founder of AnyStream. Now, we're currently using their Appresso Classroom product here at Jefferson, but they have some new things to talk about. They announced Appresso Podcast, which is a podcasting tool, as the name implies, and CourseCaster, which is a dedicated hardware device that would take the place of a full PC setup in order to capture the course content, which sounds like a pretty neat way to do things. He also touches on not only classroom capture, but its use in distance education. So here we go. This is my interview with Jeff Allen. Okay, I'm here on the floor of EDUCAUSE 2006 in Dallas. I'm interviewing the chairman and founder of AnyStream, Jeff Allen. Jeff, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and your company and what Appresso does?
Yes, the name of the company is AnyStream, and the product was a Appresso family, Appresso Classroom, and our latest product, Appresso CourseCaster. It's a family of lecture capture products that are built specifically for the needs of higher education. And what they allow a university or school to do is to actually capture all of the instruction that occurs in real time during a classroom and make it available in an on-demand version for students to review essentially immediately after the classroom. So a shortcut is it's kind of like TiVo for the classroom, and it gives students the ability to go back and review concepts that they didn't understand, or for students or faculty where perhaps English isn't their primary language or there's some learning disabilities. It really is a wonderful way to allow students to help themselves and actually learn and understand the information better than they got the first time.
Tell me a little bit about the company. I understand you're the founder. How did you get started in all this?
I've been a software developer for my entire life, and I joke that I'm unemployable, so I guess I have to start companies. But for the last 15 years or so, I've been focused on digital media, and we started AnyStream to focus on the needs of major broadcasters like CNN and Fox and ESPN, and there are many of our customers today use us to get their audio and video onto the web for news, sports, entertainment. And about 3 years ago, we started to have a couple universities come to us with similar needs. But instead of news and sports and entertainment, it was college lectures. And it actually is something we're quite good at, and we decided to look into it. And as a result, we ended up building a completely separate business unit to do just that. So it's kind of like all I've ever done since I've been around is build audio software for digital media, audio and video capture and processing.
Okay, it sounds like you're really a pioneer in this area. I know we've looked at a couple different products, and I've reported them on my podcast previously. How do most universities schedule their Appressos?
You know, that's actually interesting because we were, 2 years ago, we were actually the first to introduce scheduling. So we at EDUCAUSE in 2004, We actually launched, we were actually the first one before Tegrity, before any of the other companies to actually announce it. So we announced with Blackboard and with WebCT. We've integrated with SCT Banner and things like R25, et cetera. So we believe that lecture capture needs to be unobtrusive and automatic, and it needs to be kind of just ubiquitous, right? So we believe one of the things that we say at AnyStream is any class worth teaching is worth capturing. And we, you know, it may sound kind of trite, but it's true, right? You have students that are paying money, tuition, and their time, and faculty members spending their time and building a lesson plan to engage in this transfer of knowledge. And any course that's worth teaching is worth capturing, and that's our view. So we believe that that's the case. The only way to get it to scale broadly is to schedule it. So we, you know, we strongly believe in it, and actually, ever since we launched the product, we wanted to be able to schedule the product.
How do you address faculty that might be threatened, either may not want to be captured, or are concerned about students not showing up for lecture because then they can just tune in to Blackboard and hear their lecture at another time?
That's a great question. The way that we really do that is by giving the faculty all the control that they need. And we could say, you know, some courses may not be appropriate to be captured. I mean, the faculty member is ultimately the judge of whether or not they believe it's going to help them with their learning goals, help their students with their learning goals. So we absolutely understand that some classes may not be pedagogically appropriate for the lesson plan or how it's working. But that being the case, we also give the faculty members the control of when they want to make the content available. Some like to make it available right after class for immediate student review. Some like to make the content available only for the couple weeks around the midterms and the exams. So our goal, we believe, is to make it ubiquitous and easy and enable it, but really not to dictate the use model. And for some faculty members that that don't choose to do it, that's fine. Although I will say that students love it, and students are seeing material learning gains with it, and increasingly students are actually starting to ask for it. And it's not our product. They're asking for just the concept of, you know what, I'm here, I'm learning, I didn't get it the first time. Can't you make them available for me on demand? I'm not going to sell them. I'm not going to put them on the web. I just want to learn better, and you can take them away at the end of the semester. It's fine. I just want to learn better. It's a pretty reasonable question. So ultimately, we think that it's going to be commonplace, but it's still new. And, you know, so our goal is to give the faculty the kind of all the control they need to decide how to deploy it.
That's an interesting idea. I wasn't aware that. I guess you could do that. So at what point in the process, is it part of the schedule then that the faculty would say, I don't want to release this until the end of the semester, then they would contact their IT person or their library person to add that to the schedule?
Yeah, it's actually that's probably the most typical way. That what happens is it captures automatically. It just doesn't get published automatically. And then either one of two things. If the faculty member wants to do it, they can certainly log in with using their credentials and make it available, or they could send an email to the IT or instructional technology, and then they can choose to make it available. So it's really up to the comfort level of the faculty member. But it doesn't, and once again, even with podcasting, some say, I don't want it to be podcasted because I don't want my students ever to have a copy that they can take somewhere else. I just want it streamed. Fine, that's an option as well. You don't have to podcast it. So, I mean, really, we really see our job as enabling the capture and repurposing of the knowledge, but giving the faculty in the school the ability to control it in any way that they see fit for their use model.
Very interesting. Something that occurred to me is, how are there any universities, can you give us any cases where universities have actually used this to extend the reach?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an increasingly common way to use the product. In fact, Temple University is one where they had a number of courses actually in economics where they teach different course sections, the same content. One was done during the day, face-to-face, and the evening was a distance of purely online course. And what they've started to do now is kind of double up. The online students are actually getting a twofer, as they say. So what they do is the faculty member teaches the exact same course section during the day, captures it. It's then immediately published not only to the face-to-face students, but to the online students that would normally not get access to the content live until 4 or 5 hours later. So now they have the ability to review all that content, and they've actually reported now that the students are spending more time discussing what's already been taught because they're learning it on their own time and having more collaborative, more in-depth conversations about what it meant. So they're actually saying that online students in that case are getting more instruction. And why is that? Because the students can help themselves. I mean, this is what it is. It's student self-service. I mean, what faculty member doesn't want their students to spend more time with their instruction?
That's right.
You know, in talking to an educational community, I'm sure you've probably been asked the question, has the benefit to the student actually been documented and proven? Are there publications that you can point to?
Yeah, that's the best part about this. This is eminently measurable. In fact, we just announced a couple survey data results from Case Western University and from UMass and from Temple. And some of the most exciting ones are Dr. Ronald Brent, who teaches an intro to calculus class, which is a prerequisite for more engineering courses in UMass, after one semester saw a 10% reduction in drops, failures, and withdrawals. And Dr. John Warner from UMass Green Chemistry or Granite Chemistry, 20 years he's been teaching this class, and he sees bimodal distribution clumping around 45 and 50 and 75, 80. 20 years he's seen this pattern. After one semester of teaching it, what happens, interestingly enough, students that want to fail, they still fail. Students get A's, they kind of still get A's, but the magic occurs in the D's, B's, and C's, and he saw an elimination of that bimodal pattern. So what's happening now is that D's are becoming C's, C's are becoming B's, B's are becoming high B's, and even A's. So the real magic, this is their data, not our data. High-achieving students continue to achieve well. Students that skip and want to quit and want to fail, they're going to fail anyway. It doesn't matter what you do for them. But it's the students that really want to learn. Those are the ones who are seeing the huge impact in the grade distribution moving upward.
Wow, that is exciting. That you've sold us already at Jefferson, but you know, I think part of it has to do with getting it used here on campus and getting faculty. Actually, it's only being used in one of our colleges, and the medical college right now, and I can see a lot of benefit for our college of health professions and our new, we're about to start a new school of pharmacy at Jefferson. It's going to come online in, I think, 2008. And I'd certainly like to have this technology on board from the beginning for this school. One last question. I really thank you for giving us a nice summary of what Appresso can do. Just to fill us in on what you see coming down the line, any new products or technologies that you're going to be adding to your mix?
Yeah, we just announced at the show a product called the CourseCaster, which is a dedicated hardware capture appliance that we built. And the reason we've been working on it now for 18 months, the reason that we've chose to go in that direction is that we started to see about 2 years ago that our early customers, they get one, then they get five, then they get 10, and they're starting to say, how do I, as you were just saying, how do I deploy this broader? How do I get it in 25 or 50 or 100 classrooms? And it became clear to us that installing big PCs with lots of capture cards, and it's time consuming, it's expensive, and they don't last very long. You know, PCs, you know, 2 years, 3 years, and they're kind of, you got to throw them out and replace them. That's not really conducive to broad deployments of classroom technology. So we looked at a data projector as a model and said, wow, they're everywhere. They just work. You turn them on, you maintain them, and they last 5 years, maybe longer in some cases. So we built a new product called the Appresso CourseCaster, which runs the same software, and that'll be shipping in the spring and ready for summer deployments. And that's really the big thing coming out for us. It's the size of a college textbook. It's very small. You drop it in the classroom, you forget about it, and every time the faculty member shows up to teach, the lecture is captured automatically, and it's available to the students immediately after, and we think it's going to become commonplace in the world. I just wish we had this when I was in school.
And it's certainly, it sounds like, makes the IT job a lot easier. Jeff, I want to thank you very much. It was, I think, a good interview. I'll hopefully give our audience even better feel for Appresso and what it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
Left to do but to drive all over town. Then I found me a hot spot, and I got me online. The waiter offered bread so fresh to compliment my wine. I got the blues, the Comcast Connection blues. For every other customer, this downtown isn't news. I think it's back up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's off, never mind, I've gone offline again. I got the blues so bad, the broadband dropping blues. I got a funny kind of feeling that Comcast needs Viagra or something to help it stay up instead of hitting snooze. You know what I'm saying? Does anybody know what I'm saying? Comcast, you know what I'm saying? I said, do you know what I'm saying? Is there anybody out there? Hello? Too far from the office for DSL. Don't bother me now, cause I'm in broadband connection hell. There ain't no email, can't post to my blog. Would someone grab the Drano, cause I got a massive data clog. Silver lining in all of this is I finally have the time to go upstairs and start polishing my shoes. The sooner I'm back on, well, the merrier. We seem to be online. No carrier. Up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's awesome. Oh, never mind. I've gone offline again. I've gone offline. I've gone offline again. Anybody got a dial-up connection or something? Phone plug? Teletype?
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.